In this episode, we dive deep into the movie The Boys in the Boat and find cross-applicable principles that you can bring into your business and your everyday life. You are listening to the Fifth Hammer Growth Podcast, where we help you find harmony in imperfection as you journey towards success in life and in business. So Ryan came into the office like a few weeks back and was like raving about this new movie that he saw and was like telling everyone like in the whole world, screaming from rooftops, like, oh, you got to go see this. You got to go see this. And so we're going to talk about it today.
Dude, I have been geeking out about this movie. Like, I don't think that there has been a movie that has had so many different applications in my personal life and the projects we're working on, the people we're dealing with. That has all kind of come together in like one experience of a movie. And it's absolutely funny, dude, because like one of the first times you and I hung out, Dave, was we're in California, we're on a business trip, and I'm like, let's go see a movie. And you know what you told me?
Yeah.
You know, you told me, no, I can't go see a movie without my wife. Right.
No, it wasn't the movie you wanted to see. Let's be clear. Was a movie she wanted to see?
Okay. So I want to challenge you on something.
Yeah.
Did your wife say, "Hey, let's go see this movie," and you tell her no, and then you watched it by yourself without her, and she got mad at you?
Oh no, not this one.
Boys in the Boat. She totally told me that. I was talking to her like just on Friday.
Really?
And I'm like, "Hey, did you watch Boys in the Boat with Dave?" And she's like, "No, that Fetcher. I came home. He was watching the movie." And I'm like, "Why did you wait for me?"
Oh no, she's being dramatic now.
I was just like, "Oh my gosh, Dave really haven't learned his lesson."
She's being dramatic now because I asked her to watch it. She was on a Mad Men kick again.
Okay.
And I watched the damn movie. She was out of town.
Mad Men is her agency, dude.
Seriously. Yeah, totally.
So
that's hilarious.
So it's like, oh my gosh. But like, seriously, this movie, Boys in the Boat.
Well, so based on the book, which is historical.
Well, and Marsh read the book.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of
really?
Cool. Yeah. It was kind of cool Marsh for you guys.
So when we were watching, she was giving me like the play by play, like, oh, they didn't go into the detail here or they missed this.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's kind of nice. Yeah.
Well, and again, dude, you take.
When I had heard the story before the movie even came out, because that's how I read books, is she reads them. And tells me, right? Or, uh-huh. That's how I watch shows. She watches them and tells me. So.
yeah.
But again, you take a 250 page book and you cut it into a 90 page screenplay, right? So you've got to cut half of it out. So there's a lot of things. But the cool thing is from the book to the movie, they stayed true to the essence of what was going on in the movie, right? So that was really, really cool. But yeah, there's a lot going in here, and I mean, I'll go off the rails on this. So guide us
As we dive in, right? Recentering back on the law of the fifth hammer, right? The law of the fifth hammer asserts that it really takes the marriage of both discipline and disruption to find true harmony. And in this instance, sway, right? Flow, unity, right? And so the term that they used for rowing, the boys in the boat, right, is all about a rowing team. And how do you get this team to perform at a peak level? And it's all about sway. That's what Fifth Hammer is all about. It's all about finding harmony through these two balanced forces. And so, yeah, as we dive into the movie, it's just exciting to look at the disruptive elements and the disciplined elements that were part of this journey that a coach and eight boys, right, go through to reach like the pinnacle of sport. And so, which is winning the Olympics, right? So that's like where they go, but how they get there is a really cool story and how they start. And so we want to tease out some of these elements, Fifth Hammer principles that are present in that journey. So I'll just kind of like kick it to you guys, like share one or two of like your favorites. You kind of highlights this.
Dude, there's so many.
I was going to say mine isn't, I don't even know if it's a Fifth Hammer principle because it aligned with something I'm going through at the time. But I want to just, you do your thing.
No. I mean, there's so many.
Yeah.
There's so many in here. I mean, one of the things that we talked a lot about at Microbe was the right person in the right seat, right? And that kind of, that was when I saw that, because it starts off and it's a good movie. There's a good show. There's a guy, your hero in the movie that they focused on to tell the story, is living out of a car, trying to go to school, get his engineering degree. He has no money, barely can afford food.
Yeah.
It's during the Depression.
Right.
Right. So it's 1936, 1930s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. During the Depression.
That era.
And he's going to Washington, University of Washington. Washington. Yeah. And I heard they're giving jobs away if you join the rowing team.
Yeah.
So they show up and there's all these hundreds of dudes. Yeah. And it's the same thing when you go to show up for a job, a day job, to see if you can get picked. It was that same correlation between
I need a job.
Right. And so, and in fact, at one point during tryouts, he walked up to the coach and says, how much does the job make? Like, if I get on this, do I get a job? And I just need to know if it'll pay for my tuition, because he couldn't finish paying for his tuition. And the guy's like, it'll cover. Coach is like, it'll cover. And so there was a sense of need.
Of survival. Yeah.
Right. He didn't go into this.
Oh, I love rowing.
Yeah. He didn't go into this being a rower from the time he grew up. He went into this because I need to be able to survive.
Yeah.
And that was the underdog mentality that was brought to the movie. Right. And then what was really cool is they were picking people and figuring out. There's a scene where it goes to the chalkboard and there's 8 seats and there's names, and they're moving people around because evidently in a boat, the first 3 like make it go straight. The middle are your engine and the back are, I mean, there's different roles. Even though you want everybody hitting that same motion and rowing the same direction, there are roles based on who sits where. And the cool thing was, is they were like trying to figure out what's the right order in the boat. It's who's the right people in the right seat.
Yeah, that was amazing.
And that just like, for me, that's when I saw the movie differently. That scene came up and I was like, oh my gosh, there are business principles here. So I started watching it from a different vantage point of applying this in a business setting, because we talk so much about the right people in the right seat that just resonated. And it just, from there, it was like, oh my gosh, all these things started coming together in the movie.
Well, it's like everybody had a place in the boat as long as you were rowing. And there was this, because I've gone through this in the last few months with moving people around different seats. And I came into an organization thinking, okay, this time around, I'm going to call it early. If somebody's doesn't have the competency.
They're not an A player.
Yeah. If they're not an A player, if they don't have the competency and the drive, then they're not a good fit. And, you know, I've seen some people that don't have the competency, but they've got the drive. And it reminds me of, there was a scene, I can't remember, what was the main character's name in this? The main character anyways.
Joe.
Joe has a run in with his dad. It kind of like throws him into a tailspin mentally, and he just doesn't want to do it anymore.
And he can't sync with everybody else, and the coach sees it immediately.
But then what like got, it wasn't, and then, so that's the thing is like, it he got sort of moment like momentarily kicked out of the boat because he was like, screw this. I don't want to do this anymore. So he didn't have the drive for it. So that's the only time he lost his seat.
Yeah.
And he got it back. But like, as long as you were rowing, you had a seat. They just needed to find a seat for you.
Yeah. Well, and as we're on this kind of theme about the team, as we were debriefing and talking about this, Connor Cook, one of our other counterparts here at Fifth Hammer, like made a really good point that it wasn't about like, yes, tryouts were helping weed out finding like the top talent for the team, but it wasn't necessarily about finding a group of 8 A players that were the best rowers, right? Because a lot of these kids had never rowed a day in their life, but it was about the right group of 8,
right?
Mm-hmm. That could work together to find that sway in the flow, right? And so I think that that's what was cool, a part of this too, and underlying is, It's not always about bringing the best, because sometimes when you bring the best, you bring a lot of egos and you bring a lot of underlying like ulterior motives or, you know, personal agendas that don't actually align with the goals and the needs of attaining flow and sway and,
right,
and like driving forward. So I thought that was really
cool. Well, and I think the other thing that really stood out was they couldn't get it. That there, for some reason, the 8 guys in the boat weren't coming together.
Yeah.
And they switched everything up. They switched everything up, and they pointed to the coxswain. And the coxswain's the guy that actually makes the call. He's the one that sits there and says, stroke.
He sets the pace.
And so it was interesting because they made the comment that maybe they just need a stronger leader. Maybe they need somebody stronger in front to be able to help them set the pace, because you've got an amazing group, but they don't have the leader. So they actually called in a guy that they let go because he's kind of somewhat of a freaking fifth hammer.
Oh, I did. I missed that. Right? I thought they pulled him down from the varsity.
No, he was not on the team. The coach is like, look, here's the deal. I'm going to give you another shot on JV. And the guy's like, on JV, I'm varsity. He's like, nope, I'm going to give you another shot. And if you don't do my plan, if you don't do the things I tell you to do, if you don't do exactly the way it is, you're
discipline.
Gone.
Yeah, discipline.
Right. And so the funny thing about it is he never did.
Because in the final scene, they broke the pace earlier or later. Well,
yeah. And not only that, but at the first thing, he's like, we're going to show him what to do, boys. Come on. And he literally changed the plan.
I got to watch this again.
He had a feeling in the boat. And this is what I freaking loved about this part of the story. He had a feeling in the boat that coach couldn't have.
Right. He wasn't physically there.
And he was able to know what these guys could do and to set a pace. And I loved the idea that he's like, the coach is like, you better know what you're doing, you know? And when he's watching it and he's talking to himself, but that guy led that team beyond their abilities because he saw it in them and he saw it in him. He's like, we're going to do this. And the coolest thing about it was after the coach saw that it worked, the coach gave him the reins.
Yeah.
And the coach trusted and the team trusted. And there's so much that goes around that role of a leader, because you think about one of the core values we had at Fifth Hammer or at Microbe was extreme ownership. And one of the key things in extreme ownership was there's no bad teams, just bad leaders. And that change at that leader, at the coxswain, the guy that set the pace, made all the difference in the world for that JV team. And they, from that point on,
They started beating the varsity team. They started winning every meet,
performed.
And all the competitions, to the point where they had an incredible season. And this was my favorite part of the movie is now it happens to be that this is the year that whoever wins the NCAA tournament has a spot to go to the Olympics, right? And this was like depression right around World War II. Germany was on the rise, right? So like, I think the Olympics were in Germany.
1936 Olympics were in Germany.
Yeah.
Same year that Jesse Owens went to Germany and ran. I mean, so there's all kinds of history.
There's so much cultural things happening at the time, right? And so, and this was in the midst of it. And so now the coaching staff and the organization had like a hard decision to make of who are we going to, you know, send to this tournament? Because we know that the winner has the bid is the Olympic team. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to observe like the coaching staff having their conversations, getting ready to like make this decision and announce to the alumni, to the teams, both varsity and JV, to the booster, you know, club, to like the organization as a whole. And the assistant coach, they were kind of debating it. And I just remember the assistant coach getting really like fired up and angry, like, because the head coach was like, hey, what if we send our JV team? Because they'd been doing well, but
the other side of this varsity, and if you remember in that conversation, we didn't hear a lot about the varsity team, except that JV was doing so good, right?
Yeah.
Varsity team, right. In that conversation, the assistant coach said, well, the varsity team hasn't lost either.
Right.
So the varsity
team were good.
And wasn't a bunch of scrubs.
They had more experience, right?
Right.
They'd been rowing for a long time. Sometimes some of them even their life.
But so they also had never won that.
But they've never won that regalia.
Yeah, right.
Right. So it wasn't the fact that like varsity was a bunch of scrubs.
No.
But they were doing good. In fact, they got the invite to the gala because of what varsity's been doing, because they've been winning. And so it was one of those situations where, okay, well, we got the invite. Who do we take?
Yeah.
And the assistant coach, like you're saying, was like, well, there's no question.
Yeah.
I mean, we take varsity. This is our jobs are on the line. If you make this decision and it goes bad
and you risk, yeah,
we're done. And this is my life too.
Oh yeah.
And it was a good debate. I mean, it was short.
Well, he didn't agree at all. He was pretty frustrated and flustered and like, hey, you're not going to risk my livelihood. You might want to risk yours, but you're not going to risk mine. Like, yeah. Don't even think about it.
Well, there's a little literal discipline and disruption clash right there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And and this is why I love, I'll come full circle. So they show up at this big press release media day, right? Head coach is going to announce, you know, make a big statement, who's going and all this. And he starts talking up like, I think we have a team that could not only go win this tournament, that could really go take it all the way through the Olympics. And like, people are cheering, are excited. You see like the JV team kind of like distraught, like, ah, yeah, it's not going to be us. And then he announces that they'll be sending the JV team. And nobody knew, except for the head coach had made that decision.
And his wife, because you
and
saw
his wife,
you
yeah,
saw, right, you saw right. the look in the wife was there to support,
yeah,
which was
yeah.
a beautiful moment because, you know, we all talk about things with our wives. Mm-hmm. When we get in those situations, we're all talking through it. Right.
Well, and oftentimes they give us the power.
Oh, absolutely.
To believe. It's like the Rocky moment when Adrian wakes up and goes, win. And Mickey goes, what are we waiting for? And they just go running out to go fight.
Yeah.
It's like,
right?
Yeah.
Right. And the thing I love about that is the boosters were pissed because you have to remember in college sports, boosters are everything. And so you had this chairman of the board, the booster board, who had a son on the varsity team who was like, my son's going to do this. My son's going to do this. He's been rolling.
I
pay your salary. And then they're walking down the hall and that dude lights up the coach like, you're fired. You're not the coach anymore. You can't do this to my boy. You can't do this to that team. They have more experience. And he's like, and he looks at the assistant coach and he's like, he could take this team to the regalia and he can do the same thing.
Yeah. And the assistant coach says, I would have made the same decision. Right. And so it was really cool to me to see that transformation. And it really ties into one of the core principles that we talk about with Fifth Hammer, that really helps you in making a decision and finding unity when you don't agree. And that's this accept or agree principle, right? And you saw that even though this assistant coach didn't agree early on, in just that short time, he accepted it and realized that was actually probably the best decision, right? And so to me, it was just a beautiful depiction of that.
When I've heard disagree and commit, accept versus, right. And that's something I've learned a lot just even in the past year is just being able to support the person that's where it's all riding on their shoulders. As a younger person, you know, coming up in my career, I'd always be like, we got to be doing this. We got to be doing that. And even up until recently, but there's like the person that it's all on their shoulders. And at times, oftentimes we do have to be able to disagree, but commit to the decision that they're going to make. And I didn't even pick up on that. Like, you guys brought that up and it was just such a beautiful depiction of that concept.
Oh, it's probably one of the best depictions of that accept and support mm-hmm. that I think I've ever seen in anything theatrical like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was because you always get the guy that's like, well, I'm going to go to the board and we'll make this happen my way, you know, because he's looking out for that was a team. And I think that's one of the things that was so beautiful about the story was it was all about the team. Mm-hmm. It was all about not only the boys in the boat rowing in sway, but it was the coaches in sway. It was everybody came together in sway. And that right there is the thing that's beautiful about a company.
And once you have it, it doesn't guarantee you're going to keep it. They had it. Joe had some outside influence, right? The interaction with his dad that affected him mentally and they lost it. We all are humans. We all have external forces, family, other stresses and pressure, health, and things that influence how we show up when we come to a team in a professional setting. Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, and even during the Olympics, their main guy
got sick.
Their main guy that was in front setting the pace got sick and got sick to the point where they were like, dude, he's not going to be able to row. And that would have changed the entire dynamic. In fact, he's like, I'm in the boat. I'm going to do this. And this is the beauty about a leader meeting people where they're at, because He's in the boat and he's struggling, and the coxswain knows he's struggling.
Well, and the team is yelling at him, come on, dude, let's go. Come on, dude, the whole team. And they couldn't shake him. They couldn't wake him up.
So, and the beauty about this is that guy in the front of the boat, earlier on in the movie, they were cleaning up the auditorium, the theater room, and he sits down and starts playing a song on the piano. And everybody's like, what can't you do? Right. Cause this dude is like perfect. He's playing the song on the piano and he's a little mute.
He doesn't talk much.
Yeah. They start singing and they go to a dance, and the dance is, he's kind of sitting there by himself and he's looking at this girl and he's like super shy. And one of the buddies from the team comes up and is like, come on,
go play.
And
go play the piano.
They put him on the piano at the dance and everybody's singing the song. Yeah, right. Yeah. So there was a little bit of background to that. Well, they're in the boat at the Olympics. And they're just dying. They're probably four boat lengths back.
They get the worst lane. It's not good weather. Right? Their lead rower is sick.
And the coxswain was so cool because he takes his megaphone off, because they have this megaphone strapped to his face so he doesn't have to hold on to it and he can just yell. He takes it off and he looks at him and says, come on, guy, you can do this. Come on, we can do this. And he starts singing the song to him.
I forgot about the boat.
And all of a sudden, this guy who you just looks ghost, and he's not there. In his eyes, he's not there. All of a sudden, he gets this smile, and he looks up, and he digs deep. And I freak, and then everything comes together. They hit it, and they win. And in fact, when I was watching the movie, I actually Googled 1936 rowing the photo finish, and I saw the photo that they were looking at, dude. And it was close. It was so close that Hitler was pissed that Germany lost, right? But the cool thing about that is, here's a leader that identified a problem in the boat, in action, in midstream.
Yeah.
Identified a problem and met that problem where it was at.
Yeah.
And motivated and led. That leader couldn't do it. They couldn't change seats.
Right.
But he motivated and led through. And then he asked them to give more. They hit a pace that they've never hit before. And it was so loud in the book. And you brought this up. Marcy mentioned it. And you could see it in the movie.
It was subtle in the movie.
It was subtle. Yeah. That stretch that they were in had so many people. And the Germans were so loud that they couldn't hear the call at the end of the boat. Mm. So he had the dowels that he used to steer. And he was hitting the side of the boat.
That's what that was for.
He was hitting the side of the boat
set the pace.
And he just got faster and faster and faster. And they were hitting a pace that they've never hit before. And they came back literally four boat lengths to win the Olympics, to win gold.
Well, you think about one of the other principles we talk a lot about is repetition and clarity, right? Doing something like this.
It reinforces
the message. It's just repetitive, right? Yeah. When he's calling, he's like, 52, 52. And go, right? Like, how repetitive is that? I think as leaders, sometimes it's hard for us. And I know for me personally, whether I'm leading in my home with my kids or leading a team, sometimes you get annoyed. I get annoyed if you have to be so repetitive or you have to say the same thing, right? Over and over again. That's part of leadership. That's part of good leadership. Like, just to come to expect that and to do it. And sometimes you have to do it different ways. Right. Sometimes you say it in a company meeting and it's not heard. And so you got to show it in a different form. Right. Sometimes you write it in a job description. It doesn't get done. And you got to set that expectation a different medium. But I think that was a really cool depiction of some of the repetition that's required.
You just reminded me, I was on a one-to-one this past week and this person's kind of been struggling. And I've been trying to figure out, like, how can I get this person to make progress here? And sometime in December, I thought to myself, I don't think they really want to do this. That's the problem. They're not meeting me halfway. But I kept asking, do you really want to do this? Is this really what you want to do? I just kept asking that question. Well, the answer kept being, yes, I want to do this. Yes. Then this past week, I asked, are you interested in this? Actually, no, I haven't been interested in it at all. The way I was asking the question, I was just asking the question wrong.
Same question, like, different.
By saying, do you want to do this? I was appealing to the nature of, well, yes, I want to help. I want to be there for this team.
But I'm not interested in it at all.
You know, it's like, it's kind of like if you were to ask Joe, do you like rowing? I think at one point in the movie, he said he doesn't like it.
No.
But it was a
necessity. He needed it.
Yeah.
Right. But the other cool thing about, take the concept of that tapping, right, is it's concise.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, repetition is great, but that motion is concise and simple. So lacrosse season started for us. Jason and I, who have a couple of young coaches assisting us. And as one of the things I've noticed is that their instruction is like verbose. It's all of this stuff. And I keep telling them, guys, simplify the message. Simplify the message. Be concise with your direction and they'll pick it up faster. Right. And repetition and consistency and concise.
Yeah.
Be direct in what you're trying to do. And there's nothing better than just like this is all they needed. And it was concise, it was consistent, and it set the pace for them. And that's like there's so much more that goes into this movie, but it's one of those that, first of all, it's a historical sport movie. Historical sport movies, I think, are the best freaking movies.
No, without a doubt, like Rudy, all those things.
Hoosiers. Yeah. You go through. I mean, We Are Marshall. I mean, all of those historical sporting movies are phenomenal. Even makeup ones like Legend of Bagger Vance. Right.
Sure.
Period movies that are focused around sports. Cause we, there's such an energy driven in sports. Right. Yeah. That same concept of that movie can play in any small business, in any other business that is trying to figure out how to grow.
Well, there's this triad around life of like war, sports, and business that all kind of, you can apply. I think there's applications both ways in all of those. But I've just been on this kick. I was on this kick a while ago about borrowing applications from sports and bringing it into business. So I was falling in love with re-examining my past as like an athlete and playing basketball and the coaches I learned from and watching like Ted Lasso with the teams like this. And now I'm going back to after having like a poor leadership experience like with my son and some coaching, I'm starting to realize that sports coaches have a lot to learn from organizational leaders as well.
Right.
So there's like applications back and forth, but these sports movies have just some of the greatest analogies for some of this stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you haven't seen it, watch it, but watch it one to enjoy the movie. But rewatch it to pick up all of the business
applications
and those opportunities to learn. Because it is full of them, and we've touched on a couple of them, but there's moments in there about humility, sportsmanship, like supporting the other team. Joe got a seat back. We mentioned that he left the boat for a while, but he got a seat back because he humbled himself. He was packing his bags. He was gone, but he humbled himself and he went to the coach and was like, I need this. He's like, I absolutely need this. And that's all it took is to show humility and the determination to be part of the team. And there's guys like, if you think through it, and I loved what you just said, Dave, about asking the question the right way, because as a leader, you've got to peel the onions, the layers off the onions, and find out really what's in the center of something going on. Because when a problem hits, problems can disrupt in a negative way that can just destroy an entire team. And so you've got to be able to peel those away and drive with it. So it's exciting. It's a great movie. Again, it's one of those that I've talked more about this movie than probably any other movie in a long, long, long time.